Warning: the following podcast, which contains strong language and mature content, is unsuitable for children or for the faint of heart. The subject matter discussed will be frightening and graphic in nature. Listener discretion is advised.
When you want to hear about the paranormal, you get the Spooked Girls. True crime that makes you hypothermal with the three Spooked Girls. Stabby snippets will give you dreams. Tara and Jessica will make you ask great, along with the Spooked Girls. Bring on the slaughter. We on that haunted ground. The three Spooked Girls.
Hey, Spooksters, and welcome back to another episode here on Three Spooked Girls. My name is Tara, and as always, I'm here with my ghoul friend, Jessica.
Hello.
And today we are going to be talking about a case known as the Jason in Hell case or the Worley family case. Our friend Shelby from Scare You to Sleep, she came onto our show last spooky season during our Vital Conversation series, and she told us to look this case up. And I did, and it's a lot. I'm going to give a trigger warning right out the gate that this does involve children. So please bear that in mind as you listen to this. It's a whole lot of messed up stuff. But before we get into that, if you are new here, hello and welcome. Thank you for checking out the show. This is going to be another video episode. So our podcast listeners, you can find us on YouTube. This one will be on YouTube. Mandela Effect the previous week was also a video. So kind of just something new we're trying out a little bit. Just, you know, seeing how it goes. But if you would like to hang out with us on social media, you can find us on Facebook, Instagram, and Threads. Our handle is at Three Spooked Girls. We also have our amazing Facebook group, which is Three Spooked Girls Official. That's where we do book club, our discussion threads for all of the episodes, all kinds of fun stuff. It's literally Jessica and I's favorite place on the internet completely. And if you would like to support the show, you can go to patreon.com/threespookedgirls. For as little as a dollar, you get one bonus episode a month. Five and up, they get additional video content. That series we mentioned earlier, they have access to all of the videos of that. And most importantly, they get ad-free episodes the day before publish day. Mm-hmm. So lots of good stuff over there. And if you're on TikTok, you can find me as spooky_sleuth, where I cover true crime, paranormal, books, random shit that I think is funny, because TikTok is such a shit show now, especially with TikTok shop, that I just am doing whatever I want on there. But there is actual content, so it's got an array. It's an array. And I'm gonna have some more movie content coming out, so definitely check that out. But before we get started, Jessica has a super exciting announcement that we wanted to share with you guys.
I am so excited. This has been kind of like a dream come true for Tara and I.
Yeah.
If you're one of our OG spooksters, we've been around since 2018 and we've grown the show and we've really put our heart and soul into it. And as of today, today is our official launch with them. We are part of the Bloody Disgusting Network.
Yes. Bloody FM. Bloody FM.
Bloody FM. I am so excited. We are just, there's not even really words to describe.
No, it's still hard to like comprehend.
Yeah.
Yeah, that we're a part of that family now. I'm so excited.
We're doing like onboarding calls and I'm like, oh my God, this seems so weird. Like they're talking to us about this and like, just so we're so excited. So we just want to say that we've joined that network and we're just going to be transparent about it up front. There might be a few more ads in here. If you want ad-free episodes, we do have our Patreon. Mm-hmm. We're so excited because this just means that we're part of a bigger family now. Like Three Spooked Girls has joined the Bloody FM family.
Yes. Oh my God. So cool.
We're so, so excited about it. And there's going to be other things that are going to come out throughout the year with this and other opportunities as well. So we are super excited. And please come to the Facebook group and like celebrate with us, because this is like a big fucking deal, guys. Like, I don't even know how to like regulate my emotions around this.
I know. So this has been in the works for a couple months, I think, at this point now. Yeah.
Yeah.
And for those that might not know, OG Spooksters, you guys will know, because we used to kind of talk about this more, like behind the scenes stuff. Jess does all our amazing merch and all of our like graphics and stuff like that. And then I pretty much take care of like all the back end stuff. So all the editing, it's usually me on the socials, things like that. So I'm the one who signs like our, you know, our stuff. So when I signed our contract and I got that back completed and all official, like I got so emotional, because it's just, it's so great. It's like such a weird, it's a surreal feeling. That's that word I was looking for.
Yeah.
It's such a surreal feeling, because we're going on this, 2024 will be 6 years of the show. And, you know, this is something Jessica and I always wanted, but you know, like we're realistic, you know, you like, it doesn't happen for everybody.
Right.
So it's all thanks to you guys. So we literally cannot tell you guys enough. Thank you so, so much for being there for us, for listening. A lot of you have been here since the beginning. So you've went through a lot of life changes, moves, all kinds of stuff with us. And we just want you guys to know, like truly from the bottom of our heart, thank you. And we love you all so much. And I'm so fucking excited for what we have coming. It's going to be awesome.
Me too. Oh my gosh. So yay. We're
okay. Okay.
If you're new here, you haven't figured it out yet, but Tara and I are both really weird. So
yes, I mean,
we're like, yay. We're like, we're very, very excited. We just don't emote correctly.
It's fine. It's fine. But enough mush. I have to get away from that, because I am just highly emotional anyway. It's fine. Okay. So we're going to go ahead and get into this case. Again, if children cases trigger you or affect you very negatively, please go and check out anything from our backlog, check out other videos, and we will see you next time, because we completely understand. We are huge on mental health. And yeah, I just wanted to put that out there in case people aren't familiar with this case, because I was not until I researched it. All right. So are you ready?
I am.
Because I know you know nothing about this.
I don't.
So on November 17th of 2016, Brandi Worley brutally murdered her two children, ages 3 and 7, and then tried to take her own life just one day after her husband had filed for divorce, allegedly saying, "Now you can't take my children from me," to her soon-to-be ex-husband, Jason.
The fuck, lady?
That's what we're in for, guys. So before this horrific crime occurred, Jason and Brandi, they were married for 7 years. They were engaged for 2 years previous to that, and they were married in 2009. Shortly after getting married, they had their first child, and they faced a lot of difficulties. Their baby was born, he was born 10 weeks early, and so that is a very traumatic time and very stressful time. Now, at that point, the couple decided to make a promise to each other to prioritize the well-being and happiness of their kids above everything else. Jason has said in an interview, quote, "We always said the children would come first, even before each other or our marriage," end quote. And 4 years later, after their son was born, they would have a daughter. But as time went on, Jason began to suspect that his wife was being unfaithful, and he turned to Reddit for support.
Damn. Reddit?
Yes. Reddit posts will come into play with this. I think that's also kind of what makes this case a little unique too. So his post title was, "I'm 30 male, having a hard time coping with my wife, 29 female, having cheated on me with our neighbor, 51 male.
I don't know why the age gap just shocked me. I was like, oh damn.
Right?
Grandpa's got game.
So he put a too long didn't read at the top, just kind of give us a little bit of context. It says, TLDR, "I caught my wife cheating on me over a year ago. I stayed with her for the sake of our children, but I haven't been able to get it off of my mind since." So buckle up. This is a long post. So it had been 476 days since I confronted her about it. How do I know? Because every time I catch myself thinking about it, I tell myself, it's only been X days, maybe you won't think about it tomorrow. So to go back to the beginning, I had taken on a new project and new responsibilities at work. I was working a lot of hours, 60 plus per week, and was noticeably stressed. It was May 2015 that I noticed she had added a password to her phone. When confronted about it, she told me it was because she was planning my Father's Day present and didn't want to ruin the surprise for me.
It's not a very nice Father's Day present.
About a week later, she came to me and told me she had felt guilty about keeping a big secret from me and told me that she was having our neighbor, a contractor, build a home office for me as my present. It struck me as odd as in her 6 years together, she had never felt guilty about anything and always insists that she never regrets anything in her life. Yeah, that would be a huge red flag if all of a sudden.
Yeah, their affair is very like a certain kind of adult entertainment story. Like, Mr. Contractor.
Oh, it gets worse. Jason continues on saying, time goes on, her phone is still password protected, and things don't feel right. I see her using her phone and smiling to herself more and more often. But when I ask her what she's doing, she says nothing and puts her phone away. So one morning, I wait for her to get in the shower, and I grab her phone before it requires the password. Damn, you had to be, like, doing that with swiftness.
Depending on how quick, because, you know, you can set those for, like, 10 seconds.
Yeah. He goes on to say, I go through her messages and find that she's texting the neighbor, quote, I am all covered in frosting. You wanna lick it off, end quote. There were no other messages to the neighbor, but I found out later that was because she had set up her phone to delete messages after a certain amount of time.
Oh, so she like clever.
She's sneaky. I felt uncomfortable with it, but I knew she had a perverted sense of humor and I thought she would never do anything to hurt me. Okay, even if you do have a perverse sense of humor, that's crossing a lot of boundaries unless you have explicitly talked about it being okay.
Or if, let's say, there had been like a party in the neighborhood and that had somehow happened, like you're carrying a cupcake and it gets on you and like someone in the neighborhood was like, oh, do you want me to lick it off? Like, you know, gross. But it's been like now it's like a funny joke amongst like certain neighbors.
Yeah.
But this clearly is not that moment because he's like, the fuck?
No. So more time goes by and the neighbor is spending more and more time at our house, but the office is being completed slower and slower. I can't help but worry that something isn't right, so I start checking her location using Google Timeline. It was at this point that I realized that there are large gaps in her GPS history because she was turning off her phone's GPS. Fast forward to July, and at this point, the paranoia is driving me nuts, so I tell her I need to install a new antivirus for her phone. While she has it unlocked for me, I install anti-theft software so I can remotely turn the GPS back on and set up AT&T message backup and restore so I can read all of her text messages from that point on my computer.
That's a lot.
I know.
I'm just at this point, if you're not if you have to do that, you already know the answer.
The next day, my mother asked to spend time with my two kids, so my wife drops them off with her and has the day to herself. I watch my wife's activity from work as she spends the day trying to meet up with the neighbor but is unsuccessful because he's busy with another job site. That night, we get the kids back from my mom's house and we go out to dinner with the neighbor, his girlfriend, and his son. My wife and his girlfriend are having a good time drinking, laughing, and just joking around. His girlfriend mentions that she would like to see Magic Mike XXL. I say it's a good idea. I'll watch the kids so my wife and her can go. So my wife and her go, and the neighbor and I go back to my house so the kids can play video games together. The kids are back in my son's room playing games, and the neighbor is sitting across from me on the other couch. It was at this point that my wife started texting him. She is describing sex acts that she would like to perform with him and he is reciprocating. She tells him to check his Snapchat and at the same time, I get a Snapchat from her too. Are you ready for this? It's her doing things to herself in the bathroom stall.
Magic Mike XXL wasn't even that sexy. Don't need to be diddling yourself in the bathroom.
Ew, no, that's gross. You're in a public bathroom.
No.
No. And the fact that she sent the same video to both of them.
Oh, I thought the next words out of your mouth were going to be like, he texted her back, didn't get anything. And then she was like, oh shit, I sent it to my husband.
No. She sent it to both of them.
Gross.
They keep talking, trying to figure out when they can meet up and have sex. They decide on Monday morning after I go to work. So in my head, I had already planned to pretend to leave and circle back to catch them. But then they tell each other that they love each other and it is all I can do to not leap off the couch and knock him out. But I contain myself and continue reading the conversation unfolding in front of me. He then tells her, you're my girl now. To which she replies, always have been, ending with him writing, and always will be.
Sir, you're sitting in the room with her husband.
And you're in the same house as her kids. Like, you're in their family home doing this.
I mean, obviously, like, he doesn't care because he's been diddling her the whole time that they're building the office.
I know. It's disgusting. My wife and the neighbor's girlfriend return from the movie and I ask them politely to sit down. I then ask the kids to stay in my son's room and shut the door. I return to the living room and confront my wife and the neighbor. I say, so you two love each other, huh? My wife goes into full-blown denial mode and the neighbor's girlfriend starts smacking him. I ask my wife if she had been texting him and she says no. So I show her the text messages and she admits to it, but says it was the first time it had gone that far. I ask my wife if she'd sent him pictures. She says no. So I show her the picture. She admits it, but says that was the first time. Sure, Jan. There's no way. Like, no one's gonna fucking believe that. Just saying.
Yeah, you have to be really comfortable with yourself and the person you're texting to send them a bathroom selfie of you doing naughty things to yourself.
Yeah. Because I didn't want to wait to catch them having sex together, I didn't have any evidence to prove her wrong, so that one stayed unresolved. I tell her that I'm leaving her, and she tells me that she will make sure I never see my kids again if I do. She planned on using the fact that I had attempted to take my own life in high school to prove me unfit to have the children. She continues to say that it was my fault for being so busy with work and stressed out, and that she just wanted someone she could talk to. Then she gave me an ultimatum to decide what I'm going to do, or she will decide for me. The neighbor's girlfriend starts defending the two of them, saying that it couldn't have been serious if they weren't having sex, and that my wife and I were too perfect together to let this break us up.
Oh, somehow this bitch is involved.
Or her and the neighbor, her boyfriend. Maybe they have an agreement.
Right. That's what I'm saying. Like, she somehow, like, she knows about this already.
She's very calm.
Right.
Besides smacking him.
Which is kind of like, I interpret that as, like, she hit him, like, he doesn't know.
Mm-hmm. So the neighbors go home, and my wife and I argue for the rest of the night about what we're going to do. We go to bed separately, having not resolved anything. We keep going back and forth on the subject all weekend and finally settle on we were going to separate temporarily while we figured out what we wanted. I was going to stay in the house, and she was going to take the kids and go to her mom's. That Monday, I go to work, and I get a text from her in the middle of a meeting with my bosses stating that she had explained things to our kids, but that they were upset and I needed to explain it to them also. They're 3 and 7, by the way. I get home from work and find my kids crying. She told them that mommy had to move out because dad was mad at her. When my son wanted to stay with me, she told him that he can't.
Ma'am, those are consequences. You don't get to fuck the neighbor for 6 months and then not get removed from your home.
Yeah.
Consequences.
My son put it together that if mommy had moved out because I'm mad at her and he must move out, then I must be mad at him too.
Oh no.
My daughter was crying because my son was, but I don't think she was old enough to understand what was happening. It was that moment I realized she was going to drag the kids through hell if I left her, so I swallowed my feelings and begged her to stay. She agreed and insisted that I apologize to our neighbor since we were still going to need to hang out with them because our sons were good friends.
Fuck that. Our sons aren't friends anymore. Mm-mm. Sons aren't friends. Mm-mm.
Mm-mm.
Also, girlfriend of next door neighbor can bring sons over.
I hate it, but I do it anyway. We still hang out with them from time to time, and they come to our various birthday and holiday parties. But I do anything for my kids, and I behave civil every time. Poor Jason, just trying to be the bigger person. Things die down for a while, and I still think about it constantly. I worry how can I keep from making her so unhappy that she cheats on me again. Then almost a year from the original incident, around Father's Day again, she sent him pictures. Again. She claims it was an accident and that she meant to send them to me instead. I don't fully believe her, but I move on anyway. Unless they have the same first name. But even still.
The only way that happens is if, like, you're already texting that person and then you go to, like, click the wrong name.
It wasn't no fucking accident. She's just pretending it is because she got caught. Things have been quiet on that for about 4 months now, and I still think about it constantly. This is going to sound stupid, but I feel like I have a part of my brain that I can't shut off that's always thinking. I used to use this to solve programming problems, and it made me very good at my job. But ever since the incident, the only thing it thinks about is her and him and if I did the right thing. My job performance has suffered, and I feel like I haven't gotten sleep in months. I'm afraid that after this much time and the fact that I begged for her back, that to say I want a divorce now would only make her more vindictive towards my children and I. I just feel like I have to put myself so deep in a hole that I can never get back out. I haven't really talked to anyone about this. I don't want to talk to my mom about it because I feel like she would treat my wife differently, and I don't need the two of them fighting any more than they already do. I tried talking to one friend about it, but his advice was to put my trust in God, but that was not much solace for me as I'm an atheist. So I have no clue what to do with my feelings or how to move on from this. And this post blew up because it was posted in like a relationship advice Reddit forum. And so he does another post. Update. I'm taking your advice. Instead of trying to fix something she doesn't want to fix, she has refused counseling several times in the past, even before this happened. I'm going to get myself and my kids out. I meet with an attorney next week. Thank you to everyone for helping me see how far I had my head up my ass. Now, November 2016. This is where we're at now, okay? So Jason tells Brandy that he wants a divorce, and he files and he filed on November 16th of 2016. Even with that said, though, that day they continued to act like everything was normal. They went to a dance program recital for Charlie, their daughter, and then ate dinner at home. Then Brandy told Jason that she needed to go to Walmart to get pipe cleaners for their son Tyler's school projects. But instead of pipe cleaners, she bought a knife. On the night of November 16th, Jason spent time with the kids, and unbeknownst to him, Brandy had hidden her newly purchased knife in Tyler's room. He got Tyler and Charlie bathed and ready for bed, and he said, "I told them that I love you and I'll see you in the morning." And that is the last thing he said to his children. So just a few hours later, putting us into November 17th, Brandy woke up Tyler, their son, and suggested they have a sleepover in Charlie's room. Once in her daughter's room, she straddled her son and stabbed him multiple times with a combat knife. Her daughter briefly awoke during this attack, but Brandy told her that everything was okay. Of course, being 3 years old, she trusted her mom and she fell back asleep. But once Tyler was dead, Brandy then killed Charlie with the same knife. And at some point during this, she also tried to take her own life by stabbing herself in the neck, all while Jason is still in the house and asleep. So this all happened really fast. Brandy then calls her mom. And of course, her mom's fucking horrified. And she told Brandy, call 911. And she is rushing over to their house. And I have the audio. I'm going to play it for you. I'll insert it for podcast listeners. This occurred. So again, November 17th at 4:35 a.m. is when this call went into Montgomery County's 911. And it is chilling.
One, where's your emergency?
203 South Addison Street.
In what town?
Darlington.
Hey, what's going on there?
I just stabbed myself and I killed my two children.
You stabbed yourself and killed your two children?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and what's your name?
Brandy Worley.
Brandy what?
Worley.
Okay. How do you spell your last name?
W-O-R-L-E-Y.
And where are the children at?
In my daughter's room on the floor.
In your daughter's room on the floor? Okay. What's your phone number, Brandy? And what caused you to do this today?
My husband wanted a divorce and wanted to take my kid. I won't let him find my kid.
Okay, and how old are your children?
7 and 3.
10 and 3?
7.
7 and 3?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And where did you stab yourself at?
In the neck.
Okay. Are you bleeding?
Yeah, there's blood everywhere.
Okay. And where are you at?
In my living room.
You're in your living room?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and are you armed now with the knife still?
No, it's in my children's room.
November 17, 2016, 4:36, 21.
Okay, are you still there? Hello?
Yeah.
Okay, where's your husband at?
Downstairs somewhere.
Okay, what's his condition?
I don't know. I haven't talked to him.
And when you say downstairs, is he in a basement or?
Yeah.
Okay, what's his name?
Jason.
His what?
Jason.
Nathan?
Jason.
Jason? Jason Worley?
Yeah.
Okay. And do you have any other weapons with you?
Yeah, no.
No? Okay. And what are you feeling right now? You're tired? Are you worried?
I took a lot of Benadryl.
You took a lot of Benadryl?
Yeah.
Okay. Is the front door unlocked?
No, we don't use it.
You know, you just use the back door?
Yeah. Side. It's on the side. It's unlocked.
Okay, and is there anyone else in the residence besides your children and you and your husband?
I called my mom.
You called your mom? What did she say?
I hang up and call 911 and take me here in a second.
What's your mom's name?
Rosemary Zell.
Can you spell that for me?
The last name?
I'm having a hard time. I have a hard time hearing you. What did you say your mom's name was?
Rosemary Zell.
Rosemary Odell?
Zell.
Zell, okay. Rosemary Zell, okay. Do you have a phone number for her?
So, yeah.
I mean, if she took a bunch of Benadryl, she's probably not functioning.
Yeah, but it's still just...
It's still fucking creepy as hell.
Horrifying, yes.
And my question at this point, is Jason still asleep?
Mm-hmm. I'm going to tell you when he wakes up.
Oh, no.
He's still asleep through all of this. And he is woken up because Brandy's mom gets there and starts screaming in terror because she realizes her daughter was telling her the truth.
Oh, so she thought...
I don't know what she thought, but it was just like, there's no way. Like, you know, you hear that and you're like, what the fuck, what the fuck, what the fuck? Like, there's no way. Like, you know, you got to get there, whatever. But he woke up because of his mother-in-law screaming. And he ran up the stairs and found the mother-in-law crying in the kitchen. And Brandy, allegedly, sitting nearby, told him what I said at the beginning of this episode. Now you can't take the kids from me.
Ma'am, you don't have them either.
No. Police quickly respond to the house and they take Jason outside. And this is when he hears one of the radios and it says, two children deceased in the house. And inside, Brandy tells paramedics that she tried to die by suicide, but she, quote, somehow screwed that up and she didn't want the children to live without her. Well, maybe you shouldn't have killed them.
Yeah, you did that. And then your story doesn't track. I'm sorry. Your story's not tracking because you didn't kill yourself. Not that I think anyone should kill themselves, but like, don't tell people that's why you killed your children.
So Brandy was taken to the hospital to be treated for her self-inflicted wounds. And during her interaction with law enforcement and medical professionals, she had the very same demeanor that we heard on the 911 call. Very matter of fact, not remorseful whatsoever. And so she was charged with 2 counts of murder. And, you know, I know you mentioned the Benadryl thing, but honestly, as time went on through this and through the trial, this whole matter of fact, like, demeanor, this didn't change.
Oh.
Now, this broke out on the news and everything, and Jason went back to Reddit for some updates. He posted one that says, thank you. He said, I would like to give a heartfelt and sincere thank you for the advice and support I've received here. No one could have foreseen the tragedy that resulted from me filing for divorce. You guys perform a wonderful service to those in need, and I hope you continue to do so in the future. And then he added an article in. And then he added additionally to his post, edit, I would never ask for donations. I think it's incredibly tacky. I've worked very hard for everything I have in life, but because there has been a GoFundMe created by her family, and I can't guarantee that they won't turn around and use it to support her in some way, I just ask that you help spread the GoFundMe that my employer created for me. And he drops that link. He did another post that he titled Indiana, USA, I Need GoFundMe Advice. And he wrote, if anyone has experience with GoFundMe that could give me advice, it would be greatly appreciated. My former mother-in-law has created a GoFundMe using my last name and pictures of the children to raise funds for the mother who murdered them. She intends to use them for her daughter's medical and legal expenses. And he asks what can or should be done about this.
The fuck? I don't think you should be able to use like other people's names and pictures.
No. That Reddit community, you know, they really came together to really discuss this and try to figure out ways to support him. So this is definitely an example when like there's good in Reddit, because I know Reddit's like very scary and dark for a lot of people, but there can be good, just, you know, like any other platform. And at Brandy's trial, she pled guilty to these horrific acts of murdering her children. And same thing throughout the whole thing. No regret, no nothing. During this, Brandy receives a diagnosis of depression, and it's notated that her condition appears to have drained her of all emotions. Now, her attorney, Mark Inman, explains that her emotional detachment has become her way of coping with the challenges she faces. The gravity of her actions and the tolls on her mental well-being has left her disconnected from the tragedy that she caused.
Okay, I'm doing math, and it's not mathing. You caused them and therefore you're depressed?
We both know how depression works. And this is not Mathin.
This, like, as someone who is rated depressed by, like, a clinical therapist, I feel like I have some expertise in this.
From two depressed people.
From two depressed people to you. And I get it. I get it. Like, people are going to be like, but, like, you know, everyone's different. The reason that you're disconnected and you're having to cope is because you sat on your son and stabbed him and then told your daughter to go back to sleep and then stabbed her. And then what looks like poked yourself right here. Mm-hmm. Just right in the clavicle area. Nowhere seriously.
Yeah.
Yeah. No.
So Brandy was found guilty of murder and given separate sentences for the death of each of her children. She was then sentenced to 55 years for the murder of her son and 65 years for the murder of her daughter, totaling 120 years. And these sentences will be served consecutively, effectively imprisoning her for life.
Yay, I hate when they're congruent.
I know, same. So I have one more update post. So this was a final update, and this was verified by the moderators of Relationship Advice. The title is An Update from Jason in Hell. Too long, didn't read. I'm doing better, and I continue to do better every day. The first thing you may notice is that this is being posted from a different account. I deleted the Jason in Hell account in a knee-jerk reaction to seeing my Reddit posts in the news. I guess the first question to answer is, how am I doing? And to that, I would say I'm doing well. I have bad days, but I would think it's to be expected. It is just important that I, or anyone going through something, continue to use the support of friends and family, as well as good coping skills, to not let myself be completely defeated on those bad days. I won't lie, I struggle to get back to where I am. For some time, I refused to sleep because of a combination of fear of what I would wake up to and nightmares about that night. For a time, I used alcohol to sleep, but my family loved me enough to take it from me before it became damaging and a permanent habit. I was hospitalized because I did have thoughts of ending my life because I miss my children so much. From that, I learned you should never be ashamed of your mental health, and not seeking treatment will only make it worse, not better. We've all heard it, but if you or a loved one is struggling to seek immediate assistance, your life is too important to throw away in a moment of weakness. By putting off treatment, I only caused everything else in my life to suffer. I lost my job and became reclusive to the house. But don't worry, I have been back to work since December, and I have nearly regained my former position and salary, so I am good and require no assistance. The second question would be, how do I feel about the sentencing? That is something that is harder to answer, because no matter what the sentence, nothing will bring back my beloved children. Do I think she should have gotten the death penalty, which Indiana has? No, I do not. She wanted to die, and after 9 years of giving her what she wanted when she wanted it, I was not going to give her another thing. Do I think the life sentence will have any appreciable effect to her? I don't know. One thing she always stressed for her entire time was that she knew that she lived her life without any regrets. Even after I caught her cheating on me, she continued to say she had no regrets. As for my ex-in-laws, they continue to be a problem to this day. Shortly after everything, they changed the locks on the home I was renting from them with my property still inside. After trying to civilly negotiate to return the property, it was required that I involved law enforcement. This is an ongoing legal battle. A member of the family accused me of stealing property I had purchased from them prior to the death of the children and threatened to take action against me unless I paid double what I had already paid them. I alerted the authorities, and as far as I know, that is resolved. They continue to make visiting my children's graves difficult. During the one-year anniversary, they sat in their truck and just watched me the whole time I was visiting the grave. Because of that, I don't visit as often as I would like to. If I can impart on you something I've learned through all of this, is that you should always take the time to be with the ones you love. It doesn't matter if they're asking you to read The Pokey Little Puppy for the millionth time or asking you to play Smash Bros, even though you both know they will wipe the floor with you every time. Just do it, because you never know what time will be the last. Always make sure that they're knowing how much you love them. I had the fortune of the last thing that my children heard me say was, I love you, good night, and I will see you in the morning. And then I got, when I was reading all of my articles, I wanted to end on this one, like, final thought from an interview he had. He said, all I care about is to never see her again, out of sight and out of mind. And I can't fucking blame him.
So I have comments.
Yes. Yes. Please go.
Towards her family. One, how fucking dare you? Your kin, your family, your daughter, your sister, your cousin, whatever the fuck she was to you, decided that the way to handle a divorce was to kill her precious babies. And you're making her ex-husband's life hell? You should be like, oh my God, we are so sorry we spawned Satan. Like, what the flying fuck are you doing? No, like, I'm sorry. You should be like, oh my God, live in our house rent free as long as you need to, or let us hire a moving company to get your stuff out, because I'm pretty sure he's probably not going to want to live in the house that his ex-wife murdered his children. I'm pretty sure that's null and void. But like, let us help you move on. Let us throw a celebration on the 1 year anniversary to remember the beautiful lives that our person took from you. Like, how dare you? Don't be trash.
It's just awful.
I mean, I guess related to trash, but like, don't be trash.
Right. I know. It's completely disgusting. It is completely disgusting. Ugh, I have no words for that. All right. Well, with that, we are going to go ahead and wrap things up for today. Have you guys heard of this case? Like I said, it was new to both Jessica and I until our friend Shelby mentioned it to us, and I went down that rabbit hole. It is just heartbreaking. But with that, we will go ahead and we will see you next time. Bye, guys.
Toodles.